मज्ञानतिरन्धस्यज्ञनञ्जनशलाकया चाक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमातिशिच्छिपुत्रं मत्रास्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमरूपुरीं मातरीं गोस्वावतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिकमधावशं प्राप्तो यस्या प्रतीत्थकृपाया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च तितानां भवानेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमौलिरत्नमालदिति निराजिता पदपङ्कजन्त आजि मुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्थं हरिणं संश्रयामि। नारपितचरिं चिरात् करुणयावतरणाकलो समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं सुभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरतः सुन्दरादीर्तिकदम्बसन्दीपितं सदा हृदये खन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दना। जानुलम्बितावजो कनकावदात् सङ्कीर्तनायकपितरूपमलायतक्ष विश्वाम्बरो द्याबरो जुगधर्मपाल वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो लादिने शक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गसुहृदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तु ते। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनाबंधो जगतपते उपेशा गोपिका कंत राधा कंत नमस्तुते। राधे वृंदावनादि श्री करुणामृत वाहिनी कृपया निज पाद जादशन्मयं प्रदीयतम् भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराध लक्षय चित्तश्चाकमादितरंगमाध्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दं वृन्दे नमस्ते चरणारविन्दं। श्री सच्चिदानन्द गौर हरि की जय। श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय। श्री नवद्वीप धाम मयपुर धाम की जय। श्री कार्तिक व्रात की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रमाण So, pranam to all of you. Welcome. Thanks so much for coming. It's my pleasure to to be here again with all of you. And thanks for the invitation to share Harikatha, which is in itself one of the most blessed opportunities to be engaged in bhakti. And for these days, we have thought about sharing about some ideas on the idea of the notion of rediscovering, how to rediscover Krishna in our life. And that has been kind of the inspiration to talk about these days. Of course, it's a topic that encompasses so many other topics. But to begin with, it sets the tone, at least for me, on this idea that the relationship with Krishna can be rediscovered. Sometimes that may not even be a question. Do I need to rediscover my relationship with God, or it's already there, so to say? It doesn't need attention, upgrading, updating, dating, updating. So I would say yes. Like with every relationship, Krishna consciousness is another way of saying developing my relationship with Krishna. And every relationship is ongoing. It's something that continues to unfold in time, like any other relationship we know of. It requires continuing to get to know each other, to rediscover each other. Some of you don't want to reduce our connection with Krishna to our connection to our husband, wife, children, friends, but somehow we have a point of reference here about how any relationship, in order to survive, needs to thrive, needs to grow, needs to be developed. You can't just stay in one relationship on the same exact spot forever and have the relationship sustainable. It's not possible. You grow or evolve or die, as the saying goes, basically. Right? So how to rediscover our relationship with Krishna? How to relate to Krishna as a person? Let's put it that basically. Because Krishna is not a concept, an idea. It can be. We can reduce God to an idea. We can reduce Krishna to a theological concept, a religious figure in the sky way above, somewhere else, as we were talking the other day. We can make of Krishna someone that he is not. A future person in a distant land to be attained in some remote lifetime, who knows when. But so far he's somewhere else. He has nothing to do with us. That's not the idea, of course. How we can relate to Krishna in the most intimate way, in the most immediate way. In order to rediscover our relationship with Krishna, I will personally say that we need to be open to dethrone some false ideas we may have about Krishna. That's part of what we may call anarthani vritti. Sometimes we think that anarthani vritti means we have different ideas about everything, but sometimes we could think anarthani vritti means I chant my rounds and all my impurities go away automatically. And the impurities we generally think are lust, greed, envy, and that's it. But I will argue that one of the main obstacles to our bhakti, impurities, if you will, is to have wrong ideas about who Krishna is, for example. That in itself is a big anartha. And it's not my idea. And this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. If we studied his Bhajan Rahasya, there in one section he's mentioning a list of anarthas, false values, false currency. Anartha, artha means wealth also. So anartha means something that seems to be wealth, to be something that has some value, but actually is false currency. How do you say in English? Counterfeit? Counterfeit money. It looks valuable. I have like a pile of counterfeit $1,000 bill. And I may think, well, I can buy so much with this. When you try to buy something with the first bill, person, wholesaler, this counterfeit, called now the police, you are behind bars now. 1 minute ago, you were thinking, "Oh, I will acquire so much with this, and I'm in jail." So what happened in between? You realize that you are dealing with counterfeit values. So we don't want our Krishna consciousness to be based on that, right? We want to have a real practice based on real understanding, real ideas, so that can lead us to a real relationship with a real person and a real fruit, a real result. Everything has to be real from A to Z, from how we think of God to the ultimate goal of loving relationship with Krishna. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Bhajan Rahasya, he says, he's announcing different anarthas, different false values, counterfeit ideas, however you may like to call it. And the first one he quotes is Tattva Bi Brahma. Tattva Bi Brahma, which, like, strictly speaking, translates as to be bewildered, Bi Brahma, like Bimohan, Brahma Bimohan Lila, Bi Brahma, to be bewildered about Tattva. And Tattva is a broad Sanskrit term, but one meaning of Tattva is reality or God. Like the Srimad Bhagavatam say, Badanti Tattva Vidas Tattvam Yad Jnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaneti Shabdeti. That verse describes reality, Tattva, and says this reality is non-dual consciousness and is known as Brahman Paramatman Bhagavan. So interesting. Tattva is another name for God. Let's put it that way. Another name for Krishna, Tattva. Tattva is another name for reality, ultimate reality. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, first in the list comes this anartha, Tattva Bi Brahma, which will be to be confused about who God is. Let's put it that way. That in itself is an anartha. Again, sometimes we think anartha is just lust, greed, envy, but we may not entertain having wrong ideas about who Krishna is as an anartha. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur thinks differently. So basically he's saying, if you have a wrong idea implies wrong relationship. Wrong sambandha, wrong avideya. What to speak of prayojan? Wrong idea about Krishna, wrong relationship with Krishna. And wrong relationship with Krishna, you may acquire religious PTSD or something. You may be acquiring trauma in the name of religion. That's true. So, rediscovering Krishna in our life in part implies unlearning probably some wrong ideas that we may have acquired about who Krishna is. Sometimes we think, okay, rediscovering Krishna in my life implies just acquiring new knowledge, like adding on top of whatever is already there. I have been practicing for 10, 20, 30 years. I have my pile of stuff and knowledge about who Krishna is. So to rediscover my connection with him implies gaining new information, learning verses I have never learned, reading books I never read. And I'm not against any of that, of course. But also part of my rediscovery of my connection with Krishna could be, in some cases at least, acknowledging that part of all the stuff that I've learned about Krishna, some of those things I may need to unlearn. In the sense that I may have acquired an idea of Krishna as a very, I'll give you an example, which is not an idea coming from Shastra, but from how we may have learned something. Ideas that may be utterly contradictory about the same person. Like, for example, Krishna is described throughout the scriptures as an ocean of mercy. Karuna Sindhu, Kripa Sindhu, endlessly compassionate, generous, merciful, most magnanimous. That on one side of the scale. But on the other side of the scale, sometimes I've seen devotees thinking, feeling, fearing if for whatever reason I may fail in my daily execution of sadhana in one particular, Krishna may get so angry at me, to the point that I may be risking my human form of life in the next, my next birth. So for me, those two ideas cannot go together. Or this idea of Krishna doesn't love me, I have to work hard, extremely hard. I have to be perfect, almost, so Krishna likes me. A little. And then you go to other sections of the scripture that you're saying, Suridam Sarvabhutanam, I'm the unconditional well-wish in front of every living entity. And that's like, you follow my point? And we may entertain these two simultaneously contradictory ideas about the same person. So the real question is, then who is Krishna for us? Is he the one who gets angry very easily? Or is the one who is an unconditional loving friend of everyone? Or is he the two things at the same time? Unconceivably? Is someone that if I fail to finish my 16 rounds because my wife had a baby 5 minutes ago and I had to go on emergency to the hospital, he will get so angry that he will kick me out from the human form for my next lifetime? Is that the Krishna we worship? That's not my Krishna. Sorry. So part of rediscovering our relationship with Krishna is probably unlearning some ideas about Krishna that do not talk about the all-attractive. So Krishna means the all-attractive. So all-attractive means all-attractive. We have been talking with some devotees these days, and sometimes I've talked with devotees and tell Maharaj, I'm afraid of praying to Krishna. I'm afraid of opening my heart completely. I don't know. What will he do? So, and I'm not condemning those who feel like that. I'm, if you feel like that, I'm, I don't want you to feel even worse, so to say. But Krishna is still attractive. No? Krishna is not someone who should be afraid of. We should develop or rediscover our connection with the divine in a way that is based on profound trust, based on the idea that we are connecting with someone who at every moment is becoming more loving and more merciful. That's the nature of Krishna. Not only Krishna is all loving, all merciful, but at every moment he's increasing each of those qualities. Unlimitedly, inconceivably. That's in itself difficult to grasp. How can I think of someone who at every moment is becoming more beautiful? At every moment more beautiful, at every moment more merciful, at every moment more attractive, non-stop, forever? And now contrast that idea with someone that at any moment can get angry with me and send me who knows where and demands perfection before loving. That's not Krishna. So we were talking some weeks ago with Sri Mahatma Prabhu on Krishna's unconditional love. And he was telling me, you know, how he made this type of determination, sankalpa. Okay, for the next few days, 2-3 days, I will just live my life deeply embedded in the idea that I'm loved by Krishna. And I really will enter that space, and I will remain that space, and I will treat myself as the beloved of Krishna. From a humble place, you don't need to become arrogant to feel like that. Just contact Krishna's unconditional love. So he told me I did that, and I was kind of intoxicated those 3 days. Just thinking, Krishna loves me. Krishna loves me. And I wouldn't say that intoxication was like some delusional falsity, but actually, and he himself confirmed that he made a concerted effort to contact reality as it is, right? To relate to Krishna for who he is. No? Srila Prabhupada wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is, but we want everything as it is. We want Krishna as Bhagavad Gita as it is implies Krishna as he is, and we as we are, like everything as for what it is, not the opposite. So if we dare to connect with reality, if we dare to connect with Krishna for who he is, we'll be intoxicated. A legal type of intoxication. There is place for that. We say no intoxication, but we say yes to intoxication. The intoxication that comes from knowing yourself to be loved by Krishna. The intoxication that comes from contacting the sweet absolute for who he is. An ever-evolving personality that is becoming at every moment more beautiful, more charming, more merciful. It's a very exciting project, right? It's inviting us for a constant renewal. It, I will say it's demanding in a healthy way, because you are relating to someone who is becoming at every moment more beautiful, more merciful. You have to keep the pace of such a person, right? At every moment, Krishna is becoming more Krishna, more of who he is. So there is no place for boredom. There's no place for telling Krishna, oh, again the same flute note, again the same tune, again the same dancing step, again the same anything. Because he's Navayoganam, Nityanuttamam. Rupa Goswami will say in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, interestingly, say first he says Krishna is changeless, which seems to contradict all that I've said so far. When he gives 64 qualities of Krishna, one is changeless. Two qualities after that, he says he's Nitya Nutana, which means ever fresh. So he's changeless and ever fresh. What is changeless about him is that he's ever fresh. There is something that doesn't change about Krishna is that he's constantly changing for good. He's constantly becoming more of who he is. Again, Krishna means the all-attractive. So he's becoming at every moment more attractive. So he's becoming more Krishna. He's Krishnaizing his own self at every moment. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami will say, at every moment Krishna's beauty is increasing, at every moment the love of the gopis is increasing. The more the love of the gopis increase, the more Krishna's beauty increases. The more Krishna's beauty increases, the more the love of the gopis increase. And the two of them engage in a competition where none of both parts accept defeat. So both of them continue to grow, to grow, to grow. That's like the celebration of love we want to enter. It's a constant overflow. Now, that's how Mahaprabhu walked through this land of Nadia. And today in the morning, I went for a walk to nearby Ghat to bathe in the Jalangi. And during the walk, I tried to really, on some level, to really enter what's going on here. I was thinking, just in this same path I'm walking, Mahaprabhu will walk and sing, I dance in ecstasy, overflowing in love of Krishna. That's real. That's for real. That's no joke. In this same land that we are now here, Bhagavan himself, in this most volcanic, ecstatic form, he will walk on those same land you're walking on a daily basis. But he will walk from a very different place, from a place of ecstatic overflowing of Krishna. The other day, I was in Vrindavan and I had the chance of visiting Sri Vatsa Goswami. He's a very dear friend of mine. He's scholar, Gaudiya Vaishnav scholar from the Radha Raman temple. And every time I visit Vrindavan, I want my darshan of Sri Vatsa Goswami. So he's kind enough to offer that. And we had always very nice conversation. And we were talking about this. And he was giving me this simple analogy of milk. He said, you have the milk on the pot and you put the milk on the fire. And when the milk starts to get in contact with the fire, milk starts to rise, and eventually overflow. So he said that fire is divine love. And the milk is God himself. In contact with divine love, he cannot but overflow. Now he becomes more of what it is. Even the milk is the same in one sense. In one sense, the milk is covering the whole pot and overflow is becoming bigger. It's becoming more of what it is. by virtue of overflowing. So Krishna consciousness ideally is an overflowing. Sometimes we know we may not be there. To be realistic, we also don't want here to push anything superficially, like you have to be in ecstasy by the next weekend or something, right? We cannot just like press the ecstasy button and there we are. No? That will be imitational. But at least we have to know that in principle, that's how reality operates in its most intimate fibers, intimate level. It's all an overflowing of divine love. Reality is constantly expanding. Krishna is a very dynamic person. And we are invited to such a relationship. We are being invited to participate in a connection with the most attractive, merciful, dynamic personality. And even if in our daily practice of bhajan, of sadhana bhakti, we are not still experiencing the most glorious peaks of ecstatic experience. Still, just to know that we are on the path of bhakti, that should be enough reason to celebrate today. Because we very quickly find so many reasons not to celebrate. We are so expert in getting discouraged and, as Prabhupada will say, lamenting for that which is not worthy of lamentation. So we should make a concerted effort and a determination in our sadhana to make a list in our mind of all the things that I'm grateful for, all the things that justify my day and can make my day a celebration. I mean, we don't need to wait for Krishna Janmasthami for the next Gaur Purnima to organize a celebration. You just need to appreciate the gift that came to your life. And you have enough reasons to organize a party every single day of the year, right? Because Krishna himself is a festival. The scripture Krishna has described, Bani thoughts of like a Krishna himself is a festival. His beauty, his qualities, his festival personified. That's why in the Bhagavatam, Harikatha is described Manaso Mahotsavam. To speak about him who is a festival personified is in itself a festival. So we don't need to wait for some strategic date in our Gaudiya Vaishnav calendar to organize a festival. You just need to contact he who is a festival. Krishna is a festival of qualities, of beauty, of mercy, of charm, and love. So he's festival personified. So just having the chance of knowing about that is a festival. On top of that, we can find so many other reasons to celebrate life. And even when we have to go through difficult moments, even when we have to navigate some cloudy periods of our life, that's all part of the journey also. But we shouldn't lose sight of the of all that makes our life glorious and fortunate. And fortunate. Like we were talking the other day, quoting Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in his Madhurya Kadambini, he's describing Bhajana Kriya and Anartha Nivritti. He's speaking about Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, which means unstable practice of bhakti. And he gives all the symptoms. Utsamayi, Ghanatarala, Bhyudavikalpa, Vishaya Sangara, Tarangarangini. All the symptoms that may sound very embarrassing to some of us. Like initial enthusiasm, then loss of that enthusiasm, then struggling with the senses, lack of capacity to keep my vows, tendency to enjoy the byproducts of bhakti for myself. And we may be like, yes, I have all of them. I'm checking all those boxes. So I have lots of reasons to lament. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur said, no. The fact that you are going through all that messy stuff, it's a further confirmation that you are on the journey. Because all of those are symptoms of unstable bhakti. So those are not the goal to attain, but those confirm that you are on the path. You follow my point? So you can choose to take those symptoms and get depressed because you are not yet experiencing the topmost ecstasy, or you can take those symptoms and realize, okay, this is part of the journey. This is not the goal, but it's part of the journey. And these symptoms confirm that I'm on the journey. And Krishna, what does Krishna say for those who are on the journey with sincerity? Nothing is lost, nothing is diminished. Whatever little swalpam api, even the smallest progress you make on this path, that's protecting you from the greatest danger. Name bhakta pranashati, my devotee never perishes, Krishna is saying. So he's giving so much, how to say, reassurance, so much encouragement for us to feel blessed in this attempt of renewing our connection with Krishna, rediscovering Krishna in our lives, allowing Krishna to be all that he can be. That's an important willingness we have to have every single day. Now, like, for example, when we are chanting the name of Krishna, remember, Krishna is not different from the name. So when you're chanting the name, you have to remember, the name is always new, again, ever fresh. Radha and Krishna are present in those names, non-different. So every time I sing Hare Krishna, I'm addressing a new person in one sense. So we have to be very careful that our ideas about Krishna do not get in the way of who Krishna actually is. Right? Our ideas about people is not the same as who the person are. That's many times what gets us in trouble in relationships. I'm trying to relate to you, but for me, you are my idea about you. You follow? And the other person feels that you are not relating to me. You are not talking about me. You are talking about your own idea about who you think I am. And I'm not that. Or maybe I am that, but I'm more than that also. No, don't reduce me to an idea. That's not very generous. That's not very loving. What if we are doing that with God? The other day I was reading one incredible line from Richard Rohr, Franciscan monk, dear friend of mine, also mentor. He will say this in one line. He put it so greatly. He said, our last idea of God is usually our greatest obstacle to our last experience of God. Is usually our greatest obstacle to our next experience of God. I'll repeat it again. Our last experience of God is usually the greatest obstacle to the next experience of God. Follow my point? Because I had some experience of Krishna and I become attached. Okay, this is Krishna. So I try to put it in a box. So when I'm approaching Krishna in the next moment, he's already something else. But I'm going with my outdated version of him, right? So the connection becomes obsolete. Well, like if you have your cell phone and you haven't downloaded the latest version of the app, it's not working. Because you insist on the last version of it. You need to download the new version, so now it's workable. So our last experience of God can become our greatest obstacle to our next experience. So rediscovering Krishna in our life means to remain in that fluid space, where I'm allowing Krishna to be all that he can be. And I'm not so much myself projecting what I want him to be. Krishna, 5 minutes ago, you gave me this experience. So please stay there, don't move, and remain that for me till further notice. We laugh not to cry, right? Try to imagine. Krishna is very compassionate. I mean, he's seeing all that stuff coming from us, and he still remains in our heart. He hasn't put this sign saying, I'm tired of this. No? Find yourself another antaryami, another inner witness. You are so controlling. You are so manipulative. Find another guy, another inner witness. I'm done with you. He's still there. And every time we approach him, even with our own agenda, and just when we are suffering, Krishna, give me some relief, please. And then he gives relief and we forget about him. But Krishna is so happy. Oh, he's approaching me again. Even if it's not the most deep of the approaches, his stance is so generous. We shouldn't abuse that. We shouldn't become complacent and say, oh, okay, so if he becomes so happy so easily, then he becomes pleased with too little. So I will keep my standards as low as possible. No, that's not what we are talking about. So, as I like to say sometimes, we pray to Krishna. We pray to Krishna. We ask for Krishna. Krishna, give me mercy. And then Krishna gives mercy. And when Krishna gives mercy, we pray to Krishna again. And we ask for Krishna, Krishna, give me mercy to protect me from this situation. And Krishna says, but that situation was the mercy that I sent you in your previous request. So now you are praying for mercy to counteract my previous mercy. This sounds weird, Krishna said. On whose terms is this relationship? Of course, Krishna wants us to participate in the relationship. Krishna is not a dictator. Now, Krishna is not like, shut up and listen to my will and submit. That's not Krishna. He wants to hear our opinion. Like when he's asking at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he's asking Arjuna, so what do you think about what I showed to you? Give me some feedback, Krishna said. Which are your thoughts? He's not saying, now do what I'm telling. He's telling Arjuna, now do as you consider better. Think for yourself, which is your opinion. But that doesn't mean then that only our opinion is the rule of the game. He also has his own feelings, his own will. He's also a person. As much as he's not only a person, he still is a person. So we don't let's not forget to relate to him as a person, supreme person, but still a person, a person who has his own thoughts, emotions, even necessities, transcendental ones. So it's a relationship where there has to be mutual interest. It's not all about Krishna being interested in me, right? So, that could be a daily question we can ask ourselves. What's all that Krishna can be in my life today? what's all that Krishna can be in my life today? And how much am I allowing that to happen? How much I'm getting out of the way for Krishna to be all that he can be? Or how much I'm still getting in the way? No, not to enter into a guilt trip and start to chastise ourselves, but just as a normal, when you used to think the same thing, connecting to your husband, to your kids, and to every other person you are relating to. How much I am a facilitator, where I'm allowing people to be all that they can be. How am I an empowering agent, allowing everything and everyone to be all that they can be? Or how much I'm just like restricting everyone's will and personality every time they are around me, including Krishna? Again, that's a question we have to ask for ourselves. I'm not asking here for public confession or anything like that. But I think it's a healthy aspect of our sadhana and introspection to ask, okay, am I allowing people around me to be all that they can be? I'm empowering that becoming, or I'm forcing everyone to become a, like I mentioned in my book, Radical Personalism, am I allowing everyone to become like a bouquet, like a fully blossomed person, or I'm creating just bonsai all around? You know what's a bonsai, right? Bonsai is something, it's a potential giant that never makes it. That is constantly trimmed not to attain all its full potential. So am I relating to a bouquet Krishna or to a bonsai Krishna? We have to ask those things. We don't want bonsai Krishna consciousness, just like a miniature version of something that in potential could be giant. Let's not be so cruel with ourselves. We as Atma, as soul, we have such a bright potential, beautiful, blossoming, bouquet-like potential. But am I allowing all that to happen, or I'm like bonsaiing myself many times in the name of Krishna consciousness, many times in the name of following or being chased or loyal or strict? Actually, I am trimming my potential, right? So that's not the idea, of course. But we need to have a daily conversation about these things with ourselves to begin with. Because if not inattentively, we end up sabotaging our own potential. Yeah. At the end of the day, we are our worst enemies or our best friends. Krishna says that in the Gita. Bandhuratmatmanastasya janatmai badmanajitaha anatmanastu satrute bharti tatmaiva satrava. The mind can be the best friend or the worst enemy. It's all up to how we choose to relate. So by extension means I can be my best friend or my worst enemy. If I am my worst enemy, I end up seeing enemies everywhere else, including Krishna can become my enemy. I will feel about God again like an enemy. I will be intimidated, afraid, freaking out, neurotic. But that all that speaks about how much of an enemy I'm being to myself. So, yeah, we are talking about Krishna consciousness. Sorry. So, Krishna consciousness is just another way of talking about how to attain the highest potential of the soul, how to become all that we can be. So, a few words I want to share today, at least to kickstart the conversation. Of course, there are so many things we can say, but so when we are about to go on a journey with the car, you're in the warming up section of the car. So we are some warming up. So we can open the conversation on these things. No? Even the fact that we can talk about these things in itself, at least for me, is glorious. No? I'm not promising any of you here, you come to this series of lecture during the next 3 weeks, and at the end, this will happen and you will attain, but just to offer hopefully some sincere, open avenue for dialogue, and thinking together how we can renew and rediscover Krishna in our life. It may take different form in each one of us. Each one of us are unique individuals in our unique journey. But I think all of us can ask that same question from whatever we are. How to rediscover Krishna? Who is Krishna for me now, here, today? Who is Krishna when I ask about? He's, again, theological concept, religious figure, the most real of all real person. A projection of my angry daddy. I don't know. So many things can be there, the answer. So how, the idea, of course, is how can we contact Krishna for who he actually is? Not the Krishna of my projections, not the Krishna of my childhood trauma, not the Krishna of whatever, of this social narrative, but who he is, in all that he is at every moment. Okay, I'd like to open for questions. Also, as you know already at the end, I'd like to invite any of you to also make your contribution. Just being here is your contribution, of course. Even if it's in silence, you're bringing so much to the conversation by your presence. But also, if you have comments, thoughts, questions, whatever you may like to share, we can continue talking a little bit. We have time, yeah. We have Medangsu. Nice to see you.
I think it's very interesting you bring up this topic of how we understand Krishna and we are limiting our experience of Krishna. And you mentioned the tattva, the Brahma particularly. And I think it's interesting from the other side that you see that Krishna's ability to connect to us is not limited by our understanding, the misunderstanding of Krishna. Even Bhagavad Gita, he writes in this, the temple of Jagannath at Puri, he says that God accepts the worship of a person who worships his highest ideal of God, even if it is incorrect. So I think that's just another level of the magnanimity of Krishna. How even though there is incorrectness, because of the sincerity and intention, he accepts that in full. And even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, meditation, sincerity that I will help you get to the right place. I think it's so amazing. If you can look at each other with that eye, you can see how everybody, except the Indians, but we're talking about just people who are antagonistic to this idea of we just like a world of spiritual. Everybody else, which is most people, it's actually beautiful to see how Krishna is. And I think that's another way of rediscovering and then bringing that back into our life and just adding that to our real power.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. Yeah, because of course, as you mentioned, who is free from having a wrong idea about Krishna? What I'm talking is not about getting it all right in terms of just intellectual conception or, okay, I have all the tattvas and all the proper way of explaining everything about Krishna. That doesn't mean, because again, Krishna is, it's difficult to say who is Krishna. We can say so many things about Krishna and still we can never exhaust the subject matter, we are talking about. So whether I have all the right ideas about Krishna, there's always so many more things to say about Krishna that are beyond my reach, or whether I may have some misconception about Krishna. But if I'm sincere, which that's the main point you made, Krishna will show proper enlightenment. And I will say, to be sincere, even with wrong ideas, to be sincere means to remain open, to be corrected, to be, enlightened about the right ideas about Krishna. Follow my point? Because if not, we can very easily say, okay, I may have all the wrong ideas about Krishna, but Krishna will is so merciful that he will nonetheless reveal himself to me. But I'm not making any effort in trying to get Krishna as accurately as possible. So that's, there's a lack of sincerity there, right? So I will say sincerity also implies, yeah, I may have so many misconceptions, so many anarthas, so many wrong ideas, but at least I remain open for further disclosure, and correction and purification and unlearning and so on and so forth. Yeah. But yeah, there's lots of hope, that's for sure. Yeah, we should never take, as I like to say, we should never take Krishna for granted, and we should never take, by extension, Krishna consciousness for granted. No? There should never be that point in which we conclude. We can have Siddhanta, which we will call it like perfect conclusions, but that's a tricky word also. No? Because, okay, this is the Siddhanta about Krishna. This is a perfect conclusion. It may be perfect, but it doesn't mean that that's the only thing you can say about Krishna. And you can have the perfect conclusion in theory, but how much you can realize that internally, there's no end to that. So how much we can claim to have conclusively captured Krishna, don't even say that louder, because Krishna will take him now, and a second Vimohan Lila is coming now. No? Because that was Brahma's mistake, basically. No? He thought, I know who Krishna is. I figure out Krishna. I know. And when he met Krishna in his most intimate, profound form, having a picnic with his friends, his conclusion was, this is an imposter. This is not Krishna. Because he was so convinced, again, about his previous experience of Krishna. In the beginning of creation, Krishna appeared, instructed him. And we know the rest of the story, right? He was very sure about who Krishna was, and Krishna humbled Brahma to the point that he realized, never think that you know, never think conclusively about me. Always leave the door open for further disclosure. Like Krishna saying, basically, allow me to be more. Allow me to be more in your life. Not only, Krishna doesn't just want to be more for himself. He's not a narcissistic guy, right? When Krishna says, allow me to be more, means allow me to be more in your life. I want to be more in your life. But give me place, give me permission to do that. Krishna is very humble also. He won't just impose and take out your free will and just, this is who I am and I don't care for you. No? He's also waiting for reciprocity and invitation. Right? Yeah, we go late. Yeah, no kaboom.
So, Maharaj, you said we are in Tattva Vibhrama.
I didn't say you are in Tattva Vibhrama. I was not pointing at anyone. I'm just.
A living entity, traditional living entity is in Tattva Vibhrama. And to know Krishna factually is also an impossible task, as you said, because Krishna is always expanding and changing. So, in one sense, aren't we always in Tattva Vibhrama? We'll never know Krishna completely. I guess my question is that in my conditioned state, what can I do today to know Krishna more in that way? Because I cannot fully know him. What can I know? What can I do to come out of that way? At least a little bit.
Yeah. To know him a little bit. Yeah, I would say that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks of Tattva Vibhrama, he's mostly referring to having wrong ideas about Krishna. And one thing is to have a misconception about Krishna. Another thing is to never being able to have the fullest conception, because he's always expanding. It's not the same thing, right? So when he says Tattva Vibhrama, he mostly refers to be confused about who Krishna is. So again, if I think, okay, I can figure Krishna out at one point completely, that's Tattva Vibhrama. because you are having an idea of God as limited to your capacity for understanding. So that's not who Krishna is. Now, if you say Krishna's nature is in constant evolution and expansion, and therefore I can have all the right ideas about Krishna, right realizations, but there's always something new to attain. In itself, that has its own type of Vibhrama, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur wouldn't put that in the category of tattva, because that's not an anartha, that's not like a false value, that's actual truth. Krishna is always becoming more of who he is. So how to today contact Krishna a little bit more, a little bit closer to all that he is today? I would personally say basically by trying to present ourselves to him, understanding that he is who he is. He is in constant unfolding and expansion and evolution. Because sometimes we forget that. We just start our sadhana in autopilot and we don't even think about who we are relating to. It's just like... And we lost sight of who is on the other side. So sometimes, as simple as that sounds, we can take a few moments before starting to chant, before starting to do whatever, our puja, and just like reminding ourselves, today Radha and Krishna have become more than what they were 1 nanosecond ago. They are in constant unfolding and expansion due to the nature of love. They are ever new. So I pray that I may have an ever new approach, an ever fresh approach to them. I pray that I'm open to rediscover them in my chanting, in my prayer, in my relationship. I pray to be willing to become ever new myself, because they are ever new. So if I want to relate to someone who is ever new, I must become ever new. That's the currency to pay, right? Imagine this unique symptom of anurag that Rupa Goswami describes, where Radha and Krishna are together, and after being together, they start to be in separation, and they see each other from the distance of their impending separation. And Sri Radha will tell Lalita, Visakha, like, who is that blue cloud sapphire-like boy? And she says, like, you just had been with him 10 seconds ago. She said, no, it's not possible. That's not the same person. Krishna became new already in her eyes. She doesn't recognize the previous Krishna, because now Krishna became more Krishna. And the same from Krishna to Radha. No, that's not anurag. Anurag means you rediscover your lover. You are like falling in love all the time. No? Here we have the honeymoon period, and after that period, right? Right? After that, things become serious, right? You start to prove your sacrifice, your love, your commitment. There is no like perpetual honeymoon. At least I haven't heard about that yet in this on planet Earth. But they have their ongoing honeymoon. They're falling in love like all the time, because they are becoming new all the time. So like becoming more acquainted with these ideas, I think it's important to address our sadhana from a more fresh and dynamic place, instead of just Krishna, Radha, the name, Archana, anything, everything. We start to take everything for granted, if not. Yeah, I know what kirtan is. I know what prasad, sadhu sangha, yeah, I know. How you, a class by Maharaj, yeah, another class. Everything is already like fits into the usual boxes, and everything becomes predictable, boring, and we just practice from a very automatic, mechanical place. And the more you do something from a mechanical place, the worse. As we were talking the other day, we are chanting the same mantra every day thousands of times. Imagine if you do something thousands of times from the wrong place. That's not desirable. So if you don't chant Maha Mantra from a deeply felt place, the more you chant, the worse. you don't get Krishna consciousness, you get Krishna unconsciousness. Because it becomes like a catatonic repetition of something that if you are not doing it with a positive feeling and understanding, it may be taking you to a very undesirable place. Of course, we don't want that, but in potential that can happen. If we don't take care of how we are relating to the different aspects of bhakti, so they remain ever fresh, ever new. So we voluntarily choose and want to continue being a devotee every day. The idea of being a devotee is, it's important. Okay. Louder or closer, sorry. Thank you.
So you're saying how Krishna is merciful, and sometimes we pray for mercy to kind of recover from that serious mercy. And this is a little scary because sometimes we're not so surrendered, and then yes, we grow as an individual, but the process is so intense that you don't want to surrender anymore, or you don't want to ask for mercy anymore because it's scary. So how to understand?
Yeah, I hope so. I would personally say that Krishna, I mean, because sometimes we have this idea, okay, Krishna is intense or the process is intense. I don't want to pray. I'm scared. It may become more intense. So, but the thing is that maybe with all that, we develop some fear, no? Some fear to the practice and fear to who Krishna is. And I wouldn't say that's desirable. We don't want to be afraid of Krishna. We don't want to be afraid of practicing, because if I practice, who knows what will happen. No? So better I don't practice. But if I don't practice, who knows what will happen. So better I practice. So I think it's important that we maybe learn to redefine what we mean by intensity, no? Because intense in which ways, right? Yeah, bhakti is intense, but also it's, why is intense? In which sense intense? Because I'm being invited to, I mean, intense is not a bad word, right? Let's put it that way. Life is intense. No? Being married is intense. Nothing against Nanda Jivan. It's just you are living with, sharing with another soul, and it's intense. To be alive is intense. But I wouldn't label it intense as bad. It's just intense. Of course.
Painful?
Sorry?
Painful?
Okay. Pain is there. But I wouldn't say that pain is also a bad thing. I mean, I'm not promoting pain. I'm not saying let's suffer as much as we can. But I'm saying pain has a purpose in life. There is something to learn from pain. Pain opens our heart a lot, as we were talking today. No? There are two main things that open our heart. No? Love, great love, great pain. At least I speak from my life experience. The moments I have gone through the greatest pain, I was never as present and as alive as I was in those moments. It was painful. It's not that I was desiring that and praying for more of that, but also that made me very present to lots of things that I was absent without that pain, so to say. So sometimes we need pain, interestingly. So I wouldn't say that pain is something bad. No? We need to learn to suffer. Now, it's not so much about stop to suffer, but it's about learning to suffer. Suffering comes with a lesson. The situations are not in itself bad. They are making me suffer. Why I'm suffering? Maybe it's inviting me to let go of something that I need to let go. Maybe I'm being invited to trust on a deeper level that I never trusted before. And it feels scary. Because we are limited, we are not accustomed to. We still cannot believe that Krishna is that good, so to say. too good to be true. It's as they say, right? So like we were talking the other day with the devotee, like, hey, Krishna loves you unconditionally. Even with all the mess that you are, all the imperfection you have, he already loves you. And I remember the devotee was like, I cannot believe it. Not so much that I distrust Krishna, but it's difficult for me to accommodate that someone can love me as imperfect as I am, because I've never experienced that. So it's too big for us. It doesn't mean that it's not true. It's just that we cannot accommodate that. So we need to accommodate that because it's true. Not only is it true, it's the most necessary truths we need to to learn. So I would say that bhakti life, by extension, yeah, there is intensity, there is pain, there are different things, there are different ingredients to the masala. But and we should try to relate to all of that in a way that is sustainable for us, of course. We cannot just like, we may not have the capacity to go through all of that in the fullest possible degree. We may need some vacation from some of those intensities sometimes. And then Krishna can understand that. But Krishna will never send a test that we cannot pass, so to say. If he knows where we are, so whatever comes in our life, it's coming with him knowing that we can learn something from that. It's not something that he knows you will be absolutely overwhelmed, you won't be able to do anything with this, you will be paralyzed, you will go crazy. No, there is the possibility of drawing some jewels from that particular situation. So, I don't know if that helps.
Yes, in answer, because you earlier said that faith shows up in different ways. Earlier, I asked you this question. You said faith is not the same for everybody.
Yeah.
It comes up in different ways. But when some instances like this, like you said, you can take a vacation because it's so intense and overwhelming, and Krishna's not going to judge. Then, how to understand faith? Because the scriptures give us an idea of what it is to have faith, what is correct, what is not correct. And then when we go through experiences like this, it really feels like, sometimes I feel like I'm an atheist because of the experience that I went through. And I feel very guilty about it. I get angry that Krishna probably doesn't need me because he has so many devotees loving him. And I'm scared that if I suddenly am there, I'm going to get hurt. And you know, that is a scary thought to think that Krishna doesn't care about me. Although I know he loves me unconditionally. So sometimes these experiences are not helping me be more present. It's kind of pushing me away. So I'm not able to understand that.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think first thing is Krishna cares for each one of us. It's not that he has so many devotees that we are disposable. No, we shouldn't think like that, because that's not true. That's a whole different conversation, but as we were talking also the other day, actually Krishna has very deep necessities. We think we have necessities, we don't have an idea what it means to be in necessity. Because he has necessities that come out of love. So when you love, you have a necessity to love more. And love more, and love more, and love more. So Krishna is very much in need. We think we are in need. Our necessities compared to his are not to downplay and think your necessities do not care. I'm not saying that. But his necessities are very urgent. No? For example, he's in separation from Sri Radha. He's literally dying. We cannot imagine probably that. But he's dying, seriously. One of the 10 symptoms of separation, the last one is smriti, which means death. And he never dies. No, we never had tragedy at the end of the drama, but he feels like dying. And in order for that not to happen, he needs so much help and support and assistance so that the next reunion with Radha happens. And of course, it always happens. But there's no limit to how much help he needs and she needs for the next reunion to happen again. So ultimately our service, as crazy as this will sound, we are very insignificant, tiny little jivas, but our service in the spiritual world will be to save the lives of Radha and Krishna on a daily basis. What do you think about that one? It's not my own merit. It's not like, you see how special I was. You see, finally, Maharaj is showing my glory in its full light. No, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying the incredible arrangement of Yoga Maya is that all of us will be playing such a crucial role in the world of love, which is the world of necessity. One word for love, for prem, is prayojan. Prayojan means attainment. In Sanskrit, can mean attainment. So prem is the ultimate goal to attain. But also prayojan means necessity. So you could say prem, prayojan means prem satisfies all other necessities, or prem creates its own necessity in the form of further prem and further. So all this to say, Krishna cares for us. And we shouldn't think, oh, he has so many devotees that I'm absolutely disposable. So at any moment he can like, no? And I'm gone. I'm like a feather. It's not like that. And of course, like the other day I was talking with someone telling Krishna loves not only you, but you and you and you. And the person was like, but how can Krishna love each one of us fully? How is that possible? I don't know how it's that possible, but it's possible. I cannot give you like a formulaic explanation. This is how it happens. But for him, it's possible. I mean, for us, it's difficult to even think about, sometimes about love, being kind to ourselves, right? Sometimes we don't even know how to treat ourselves nicely. We are so expert at mistreating ourselves and by extension, creating a festival of misery for everyone else around us. So what to speak about loving everyone unconditionally at the same time, infinitely, is like too much. But that's what the scripture have said about Krishna. So I think there is lots of place to rest in that idea, to take shelter in the fact that you are being accepted by God. You are fully accepted. On that foundation, you can change whatever you need to change. But to know that you are already accepted as you are, if you are honest, you won't abuse that idea. If you are honest, you won't take that for granted and just relax and degrade yourself. But on the contrary, you will be moved to tears, probably, and trying to give yourself more in a healthy way. So that's what I will say. You know? Try to stay in that place where Krishna is loving you, accepting you. And even when you have an atheistic day, let's be honest about it. I mean, you don't need to wait for the atheistic day. Every day, many times per day, we live as if God does not exist. That's called functional atheism. Now, in theory, I'm a theist. In functional, how I operate, I forget about Krishna. I don't consider him. But even in those cases, Krishna is there with us. No? I may not have faith in him, but I can rest in the fact that he's there for me and with me. So, and contacting that fact naturally brings me present back into the relationship. And if I feel that I'm being an atheist, the question is why I'm being an atheist? That's also an important question. Maybe, again, going back to what we talked today, having some wrong ideas of Krishna make me want to take some distance from that, but having proper notions about the divine, there's no need to be an atheist in that case. Yeah, some time ago I was studying a book about, and it gave this interesting research data, and it say how like 85% of people who consider themselves atheists officially, all of them had problems with their father when they were children. Almost 90%. like creating very clear connection between unresolved childhood stuff and how we can see the ultimate authority figure, so to say. So I'm saying that because sometimes what's getting in the way is something that needs to be healed from a more human emotional perspective. It has nothing to do with theological accuracy or something like that. You may need therapy. Sometimes it happens. Okay. Something else before concluding, Maivan?
Just
to
ask you a question. So you said that Krishna has...
Sorry?
You said that Krishna has committed to the knowledge of writing, we can't pursue the whole society at once. So if you try to think that depending on our state of life, in this personal relationship, Krishna is going to show us the real quality of each time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a place to think about that. And there is even sections in the scripture where it described that according to one's progress on the journey, one will be contacting specific aspects of Krishna in the relationship, because it makes sense, the relationship grows in intimacy, so somehow you start to contact. It's the same person, but different layers of that same person. So, and we may not be ready for certain qualities in certain stage and so on and so forth. Yeah, there's place for that. Okay. Something else before concluding for today, putting our conversation to rest now? I think the plan was to do some sing Damodar Ashtakam as part of our Kartik celebration. So thank you so much to all for your time, for your presence, for your attention. I'm looking forward to meet each other again soon. Sri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai. Sri Navadvip Dham Ki Jai. Kartik Brat Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Priman Hari Go. Vancha Kalpata Rubhyascha Gripa Sindhu Ke Vajha Patita Nam Pavane Pyu Vaishnave Bhyo Namo. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Hari Go.